This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, and this is a post-election edition of the Week in Review. We will welcome in two guests from different perspectives to talk with you about the top news stories of the week, including all of the political action on Tuesday's spring election in Wisconsin. And we will welcome your input, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We got a lot to get to, so let's welcome them in right away. Louis Fortas is with us. He is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, a former economics professor for Smith College and the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and he served three terms in the Wisconsin State Assembly as a Democrat. Good morning. Well, we have to put you on the air in order to hear you, so we'll say good morning, Louis.
Good morning.
And also with us is Margaret Farrow. She's a member of the UW System Board of Regents. She is a former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin and state legislator. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much for being with us. Well, there's so much to get to, but let me start with this one, because we just learned this yesterday, that State Senator Glenn Grothman, a Republican from West Bend, says that he is going to run for the 6th Congressional District, which is currently held by a Republican, Tom Petry. Margaret Farrell, why should Glenn Grothman challenge Tom Petry?
Well, I think he stated some reasons for what he's thinking about in his announcement yesterday, as I understand it. Glenn is an attorney. He's a seasoned legislator. He's dealt with issues, and he basically said so much of what we deal with is decided or handed to us by the federal government or mandated to us by the federal government, and I think we've got to have some more active participants out there to bring some reality and reason to it. So after the years that he's been in the legislature in both the Assembly and Senate, he's decided to make this move. I can't decry anyone going into a primary, because that's how I got to the legislature. I ran against an 8-year Republican incumbent to get to the Assembly after I had served 11 years in local government and discovered most of what we were doing at local government levels in Wisconsin was really being determined, at least from the money standpoint, in Madison, in the budget making and all. So I decided to run. So I think it's fair game. If the voters disagree with this move by Glenn, then they'll reelect Tom Petry in November.
I didn't know that.
I shouldn't say November, August, because the primary is August.
Oh, yeah, then he'll then there would be no opposition or maybe
right.
token opposition right. In that district. But I didn't know that you ran in a primary. So did you think that the Republican incumbent in that assembly district was not conservative enough?
Yes, we were involved in some local government issues, and not that anyone outside of the Milwaukee area would remember or understand the impact of it, but we were involved in sewer issues with the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District, all the suburban communities around Milwaukee County, and couldn't quite always get my points straight to our legislator, and I felt anyway, it was a very solid Republican seat and should be one in which people were kind of putting the ideas out there to be somewhat toned down, perhaps, as they went through the process, but more aggressively or more actively involved in developing good legislation. So that's why I ran, and I beat him.
Yeah, well, Louis, what is your reaction to Glenn Grothman challenging Tom Petry of Fond du Lac in a GOP primary?
Well, I have to also mention that Margaret and I ended up getting elected the state office, and there was a September primary. We both in the same year took on an incumbent. I took on a 15-year incumbent Democrat and beat him in a primary the same day that Margaret won her election.
Didn't
so we came
either.
In together. We came in together. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Louis. How are you today?
Good. It's going to be interesting because it's going to be a very, very low turnout election. Because there's not going to be a primary on the Republican side for governor. There's not going to be, I don't think there's going to be a primary on the Republican side for attorney general. So this is going to be essentially the top of the ticket. And So it's going to be a very low turnout. Grossman is a pretty extreme conservative. Petri is a much more moderate Republican. So it's going to depend on who's going to come out and vote in that low turnout election. And if Grossman is going to, if he loses and wants to try again in 2 years and take a risk and have to give up his seat, this time he doesn't have to give up his Senate seat because it's midterm for him. But if he waits 2 years and gives up his Senate seat, there'll be a contested election, I assume, in his Senate district, which will turn out a higher turnout in that part of the congressional district, and he'll have a better chance of winning. But I think Petri has been a very solid guy. He's a smart guy. He's a Harvard graduate, I believe, and he's been there a long time, and he's established. And if Speaker Boehner supports him, I think he'll be in good shape. If he doesn't, I think there's going to be a contested race.
Interesting, though, this week I noticed that the conservative news group that calls itself Media Trackers had a report out this week before Senator Grossman made his announcement criticizing Representative Petri for his support of single-payer health care in the past. Is this going to be criticizing him for having moderate or liberal views on the healthcare issue? Your reaction, Lewis, to that, and whether you think Obamacare is going to be a big issue in this primary?
I would say, surprise, surprise, that Media Tracker is attacking Petri. I mean, there is a little cabal here of very conservatives. We have Charlie Sykes in there and the like, and this is Grossman didn't wake up one morning and say, gee, I'm going to take on Petri. This has been, I'm sure, very well planned, and you'll see a lot of these extreme conservative groups attacking Petri now and trying to help Grossman.
Your reaction to this, Margaret?
Well, I think that I noticed that, and I know that the congressman responded to that yesterday by describing an amendment that apparently he supported back when this was all originally being debated, and that is the genesis of this article about his supporting single payer. Apparently, he does feel single payer is a good way to go, but not necessarily where we are mired down in Obamacare right now. And I think Obamacare, and I kind of will use what Lou said, surprise, surprise, Obamacare is going to be a shadow, if not a front row participant in every election this fall. And I don't think it's not those of us who don't particularly want to see our health care go toward a universal, one universal provider as the president does. But I think there's a lot of people who have been impacted with the changes now, directly or indirectly, that are going to bring it forward in their mind as they choose candidates in August and November.
Well, we will talk some about the enrollment deadline of the Affordable Care Act this week and the Republican budget that came out this week calling for another repeal of Obamacare. But let's stick to some other state political issues for the moment, including two long-time state senators giving their farewell addresses before the state Senate this week. Four in total did say goodbye to the state Senate. But I want to talk first about State Senator Dale Schultz, a Republican from Richland Center, as this is somewhat related to the Grossman-Petri race. Senator Schultz did give his farewell address on the Senate floor after serving 32 years in the state of Senate, and talked about why he ran as a Republican and what being a Republican meant to him. And he has in the past criticized the Republican Party for going to the extreme. Margaret Farrell, your reaction first to Senator Schultz, his time in office, and what he has to say about the Republican Party these days.
Well, he had a long service. I served kind of in the middle of his time and served with him. I sat next to him on Joint Finance at one point when he came to Joint Finance as a new participant at that level. And he understood his district. He knew his district. His district was very unusual. Even today, if you drive the roads of his district, you lose your cell phone coverage because of, you're in hollows and you're up on hills, and you're just a beautiful part of Wisconsin. But he understood it very well, and it was, as a result, felt to be quirky in some of his positions, reflecting what he thought was the right way to go for his people. What I find interesting is there was a period that he was the leader of the Republican caucus, and that isn't mentioned at all. And that was, I'm trying to think, I think it was when they were in the minority some years back, but it was after I was out of office. But I think he's worked hard for his people. I think he knew he was going to be up against a very stiff primary, and then there will be a very stiff general election in November, because that always is quite a contested seat because it is so split politically. So I wish him well. I think he served his people well and wasn't always understood by his colleagues, or didn't necessarily care if he was understood by his colleagues. But I thought Dale, I listened to all the farewell speeches on Wisconsin High, and I think they all rose to the oratory you'd want in that kind of an occasion. You always don't have a chance to say farewell like that.
Yeah.
If you decide to resign after the fact, or something takes a precedent over it, this was quite unusual to have four very eloquent efforts by all of the participants, even Senator Lehman from Racine, who hasn't been there very long, to make their statements at the end. But I think Dale can walk out with his head high, and even though some of his colleagues would like to have had a little more cooperation from him.
Yeah, well, what about, and I'll get Lewis in a moment, but Margaret Fuhr, does this mean Dale Schultz leaving the legislature, that there just is no room for a moderate to a Republican to be in the state legislature?
Oh, no, I think we'll always have moderates in both, I hope, in both parties. There was a time when there was a cadre of three or so moderates in the Democratic side who you could always turn to and say, let's work something out here. And that would begin the change that would negotiate a settlement between two different mindsets. I think there'll always be room for that. There were times at which I don't think Dale was completely the moderate. I think it was sometimes difficult to understand exactly what was going to please him or what he felt was necessary. But no, there'll always be, and I would hope, I think Lou would share that with me, I would hope there would always be a center place for some legislators to kind of hold to their principles but be a reasonable person to deal with.
Your thoughts, Lewis?
What I'm going to say is kind of a statement of how the legislature has changed so much recently is Dale and I got along very, very well. He and I had similar interests. We were both involved in the healthcare financing committee. We were in the majority at that point. This was when he was in the assembly, so I would always be the chair. He would be the ranking Republican. I chaired financial institutions and insurance. Dale was a ranking Republican. So we worked together a lot. I liked him a lot. We got along very well. And he was, as Margaret said, he was flexible. You could work with him. He would look at the issues. He would consider it issue by issue as it should be done. And in response to your question, Joy, about, is there room for moderates anymore? And it all gets down to redistricting. If you have competitive districts, where legislators have to be concerned about the November election, whether they're going to be challenged by somebody from the other party, they're going to be more moderate. They're going to be more willing to deal with it issue by issue as they should be working on it. If you're in a very solid Democrat or Republican district, your concern is not the November election. Your concern is the primary. So as a result, you're worried about, somebody, if you're a Democrat, hitting you from the left, or if you're a Republican, somebody coming at you from the right. And as a result, it pulls you further in each direction. And that's why you begin to get a very polarized legislature. And until we come up with a more legitimate, systematic, honest way to do redistricting and depoliticize it and end up with more competitive seats, we're going to continue to have this polarization, and it isn't good for Wisconsin. It isn't good for the taxpayers. It isn't good for other than the special interests.
Well, we'll talk about a referendum question that was on the Dane County ballot that had to do with redistricting in a moment. But sticking with the farewell speeches of the senators this week, as Margaret mentioned, it wasn't just Dale Schultz. It was Senator Bob Jauch of Poplar, Tim Cullen of Janesville, and John Lehman of Racine. And Cullen, Jauch, and Schultz have all worked together on several projects, and they all were calling for greater bipartisanship and cooperation. Margaret, are they right? Is more cooperation, more bipartisanship needed in the state legislature?
I think there's Lou and I were there at a time when I believe there was, although there was polarization then too. I'll mention a little bit when we get to the redistricting discussion about that. But I think there are attempts to be made. I know that you've got to work. No issue is pure one side or the other. You've got to have understanding. And if you ram it through I'll jump to the federal level. If you ram it through, as we saw Obamacare ram through, and Lewis could completely come back at me and say, just as Act 10 was rammed through, you kind of have the ongoing ripples that it's almost a tsunami reaction rather than just ripples on the pond as a result of the action. There will always be some who will try to pull together on issues that have to be pulled together. And I don't quite agree with Lou that redistricting is the reason, because the U.S. Senate is probably the most polarized body in the country right now. You can't do anything about their redistricting because it's two from every state, and there's no change in lines. And so it's more the personalities, I think, than it is the personalities. I can remember the legislature in both the state and the federal government but if they were led by strong, fair-minded leaders, they could work together, and we just don't seem to be having that lately.
We're way past our break time, but we'll continue talking about our post-election week in review as we continue talking with Margaret Farrow and Lewis Fortas. 1-800-642-1234. If there was an issue in the news this week or an issue related to this week's spring elections that you would like to bring up, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us as we talk about the top state and national political news stories of the week. Talking today with Lewis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express. He's a former state lawmaker. And Margaret Farrow, who is a member of the UW System Board of Regents, who is a former state lawmaker and former lieutenant governor of Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will, by the way, be talking with State Senator John Lehman on our State Capitol Report at 7:30 on Monday morning. He'll talk about his time in the state legislature. He gave his farewell address on Tuesday, the last day of the state Senate's session. He's going to be running for lieutenant governor, so we'll talk to him about that as well. Republicans say that Senator Lehman decided not to run for re-election in his Racine district because redistricting would have made it very difficult for him to win. Is that right? Lewis, is that right?
Absolutely. And what they, in the redistricting plan, which the great state of Wisconsin's taxpayers paid a fortune to a Republican law firm to draft up. They used to have the district going longitudinal, so basically there was a Kenosha district, there was a Racine district. Now they cut it vertically, if you will, and so they made one fairly Democratic district and one now Republican district. And Lehman's district got cut in half, and if he would have run, he would have been in a district that was heavily biased toward Republicans, and he probably would have lost. So, I mean, this again goes back to this politicized redistricting. And again, Democrats did the same thing, but this last time has been so extreme. That's one of those deals where you kind of push it to a point where people just look at it and say, we got to do something now because this has just gone far too far. And that's what's happened with this last redistricting plan.
Lewis, is he going to be the only Democratic candidate running for lieutenant governor?
I doubt it. Well, actually, at this point, he probably will be, yes.
Well, Margaret Farrell, let's move a little bit more into redistricting because Dane County voters did on Tuesday approve a referendum that would call for a independent panel to redistrict the state of Wisconsin, actually calling for a constitutional amendment that would change the way we redistrict in Wisconsin. First off, would that be a good idea for Wisconsin?
Well, I'm not sure. And I've looked at other states. In fact, just recently, because of the hue and cry about this, I've looked at what other states do, including Iowa, which has a very interesting twist on things and has a group. But if the group doesn't find an answer, then it goes back to their larger house of the legislature and ends up there anyway. And everybody holds Iowa up as the model. I find this absolutely fascinating. The Democrats held sway for over 20 years in both houses of the legislature, in the 70s, 60s, into the 80s. And there was not the Republicans lived with it. We were the minority. When I got to the legislature in 86, Lewis was in the majority party. I was in the minority party. It wasn't until 93, when I had moved to the Senate, that the Senate became Republican. And then in 94, the Assembly became Republican. And that was after a long period of Democratic control of both houses. And we just lived with it. And I guess we don't cry and we don't shout as loud as, or else until recently, our side has of the aisle hasn't shouted as loud as the Democrats always have when they feel abused by things. And this sudden screaming, I mean, there have always been several million dollars spent on redistricting. I served on a redistricting panel. I know how the process works. This is part of the political game we have in this country. And when the losers suddenly say this is unfair, but they've used the same process when they were in control, it's kind of, I just find it somewhat amusing, quite frankly. I don't know what the right answer is. I don't know. And you can see every form across the country of how states do this. And that is states' rights. So that is our reserve powers to the states. And, it'll swing back. The pendulum will swing back, and the Democrats somehow will become a majority party again in the near or a little bit distant future as we waded through all the Democratic control when we were in the minority.
Mm-hmm. Lewis?
Well, Margaret, you know and I know, you missed a very, very important component, and that is the Republicans would control the governor's seat, and so these redistricting plans would end up in the courts. The Republican governor would have his impact, and the Democrats had the control of the legislature, and you'd get to stalemate, and there would be negotiations, and the negotiations would fail, and it would end up in the courts, and the judges would draw the maps for the times before. This is the time now, and the reason it got so extreme, and the reason that people are complaining, and it's not only Democrats complaining, because again, when it comes to whining, I think the Republicans certainly hold their own, trust me. But the difference now is you have a Republican governor, and you have both houses controlled by the Republicans, so they could draw any map they wanted, and it would be rubber stamped and it would go right through, and that's why you have this real extreme thing right now. Extreme map. Whereas the years before, when you and I both ran, those were maps that were drawn by federal judges, usually. And so either state or federal judges. I think it's been federal judges recently, last several decades. So that's the difference, Margaret. So you missed an absolutely critical point there. And I do think Iowa functions a whole lot better than we do when it comes to redistricting. And I think most everyone would agree with that. Is it perfect? No. You're dealing with people, so it's never going to be perfect. But it's a lot better than what we're doing and what's happened in Wisconsin.
Let's clip along on a few other items on the ballot this week. 13 communities in the state voted yes on amendments or resolutions that asked if we should overturn the Citizens United Supreme Court decision, saying, you know, get money out of politics and don't treat corporations like people. First off, Lewis, will these referendum questions that passed in these 13 communities make any difference? And what are your thoughts on whether Citizens United will ever be overturned?
Will they make a difference in terms of changing the laws or whatever? Absolutely not. But what it does do is it basically lets, I think, everyone see that this is not a partisan issue. City of Waukesha, 69% voted to change Citizens United. You know, over two-thirds of the voters in Waukesha. I mean, this is not a hotbed of, you know, liberalism or left-wing thinking or whatever you want to call it. So what's going to happen is, I think, 30 or 40 years from now, people will look back and say, my God, what was that Supreme Court thinking about when they were, saying that, corporations are exactly like people? The latest one is they're worried about the corporations expressing their religious views when they're talking about Obamacare and a mandate for contraception. And but what is going to happen is eventually you will get a court that isn't. You have a very extreme group of people. You have Scalia. You have Roberts. You have Alito. I mean, Thomas. These are very, very extreme people. These are out of the mainstream of the Republican Party, the old Republican Party. And you have a situation where when one of them leaves and you get some kind of moderate in there, I think that things will begin to change. And I think the court, I say, if you look back 50 years from now and look back at this current court, and they will just kind of roll their eyes or shake their head and say, you know, what were they thinking? Because I think this is a very narrow and extreme way of interpreting the First Amendment.
Well, the referendums asking for Citizens United to be overturned, first from our Wisconsin election this week, but then I'm also going to move into another Supreme Court decision this week on campaign spending. But Margaret, first, what do you think of the fact that so many communities, I think it's now more than 40, think that Citizens United was wrong?
Well, I guess we have an initiative ability to put the referendum on ballots, and I think that's what happened in this case and happened historically throughout the years that this has been an effort. We have 2,000 communities in this state, and this certainly represents some of the populous ones. I agree with Lewis. It's not going to change anything. It's going to be noticed by their congressmen or their senators that this is their wishes, and this is the way they would like to see the Constitution amended. Quite frankly, I think free speech is one of the hallmarks and cornerstones of our United States government. And I mean, if we want, let's, you know, do what England does and limit how much people can spend on elections. And it is very limiting to the price someone running for the House of Commons can put out one brochure in two colors and deliver it him or herself because they can't afford the postage on it. And I sat at dinner once and someone said, why do you people spend so much on elections? And I wanted to give them kind of a history lesson of what we formed in this country as our rights when we broke from them. But I just think that I disagree. I think Chief Justice Roberts, in the way he wrote the majority opinion on Obamacare, proves that he isn't some wild-eyed conservative in the way he's looking at his interpretation of the Constitution. I think the most recent ruling now is hopefully going to put power back into the Republican and Democratic parties where traditionally it's been, and take it out of the splinter groups where the Feingold Law kind of drove people to, that created those infamous 527s that nobody can get a handle on, that back candidates now with private donations from all sides.
Let me jump. I think Let me jump in because I wanted to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court decision this week. It struck down campaign contribution limits for individual donors. They ruled that having a limit on total donations was unconstitutional. Caps on donations to individual candidates remain. Is that the decision, Margaret, that you said might put the power back into the Republican and Democratic parties?
Right, right. I think there is going to be, it was the case of this goes back in 1976. There was the original one that began to limit freedom of speech and for political purposes, and now the Citizens United is making statements about that, and the one this week made another statement about that to clarify it. The question that they raised is basically one of how much is too much, and how do we know this arbitrary number is suddenly going to bring corruption and graft if it goes beyond it? I think Chief Justice Roberts, in writing the majority on this one that just came out, said, and I'm quoting what was quoted from him, it's the First Amendment protects flag-burning funeral protests and Nazi parades. Despite the profound offense such spectacles cause, it surely protects political campaign speech despite popular opposition. He feels very strongly that we have to protect our freedom of speech, and to say that you can give up to a certain total amount limits, and this doesn't change how much you can give to any one person. It just says you can contribute to more people. So it hasn't torn apart all the control over individual donations. As a legislator, you have to decide what's going to make up your mind in your policy, and how much you get from somebody. In the weak ones, in the imperfect ones, you're going to find people who will be swayed by dollars. And those of us who serve because we wanted to look at what was good for the people, I never even looked back at my contributions to see who gave me what.
Lewis, your reaction to this week's Supreme Court decision on campaign contribution limits, and what impact do you think it's going to have?
Again, I think we have far too much money in politics. And I agree with Margaret when she was saying that, you know, the First Amendment protects kind of despicable speech and things like protesting military funerals and that. But that's done by people. What you're talking about, what Citizens United did, for example, is it said corporations are people, and corporations that have a lot of money, or even individuals that have a lot of money, are more influential and more important than other individuals. And that's not, you know, we are a democracy that is, you know, of the people and for the people and by the people. And so people should, when we get one vote, people should be treated equally. What this does is when you start allowing this amount of money, if you're a wealthy individual, I mean, you're important. And if you're not a wealthy individual, you're not. And in the old days, you know, people would write a check for $25 or $50. Nowadays, I mean, what good is that $25 or $50 check when you can have some billionaire like the Koch brothers coming in with money into these small local races in northern Wisconsin to help push the mining forward, and they can spend whatever amount of money they want through independent expenditures, and they can run very negative campaigns against people in Wisconsin that they've never met and will never meet and know nothing about, except they're protecting the interests of the mining people. That is just a perversion of democracy.
Well, you brought me to the very next issue that we wanted to go to, and that is that five candidates backed by the Americans for Prosperity won county board seats in Iron County. They are pro-mine, the proposed iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin. And then it was either Americans for Prosperity or a group like it also is claiming victory in the Kenosha school board race and the Menominee Falls Village board race, saying they helped flip the boards to conservative control. First, a reaction to that, Margaret, that you know, conservative groups are third party or special interest groups are spending money in these local races.
Well, I guess I just have to be amused because the Koch brothers have become the devil personified. I mean, if you want to vilify someone, say they have any relationship with the Koch brothers, who are upstanding, tax-paying, job-creating American brothers who created a lot of money because they were very smart. I mean, Lewis has been a very successful businessman because he's very smart, and he remains concerned for his community. So do they. What about George Soros? My word, in the 2008 election, he was all over the place along with Michael Moore. And we just don't name call as well as the other side does. So I find that amazing that if you want to vilify someone, say it's the Koch brothers, the organization they helped form has an interest. And I think what the conservative side of life has done is take a page out of the unions. For how many decades did the unions unify their message, get out to people with their message, and plug for candidates? And we sat back and watched this united front just come at us like a steamroller. Well, the conservative side of life has now begun to do the same thing, and suddenly it's a very bad way to do politics and to control things. I think it's quite amazing. Remember, it's the person, the individual, that goes into the polling place and pulls the lever or marks the ballot. And I would like to think that they filter through a lot of the stuff that they hear on both sides and make their decisions. And to say it's controlled by some huge, you know, effort by two men called Koch, I think that insults the intelligence of those people up in northern Wisconsin. Maybe because they're there, they know what's good for their area and for their economy, and they're trusting what's going to happen. We're still trying to clean up farming. Farming is still polluting our streams. We say, all right, we're going to clean that up, but we don't vilify the farmer. We know we need them for our economy and our nourishment. Mining, we have a state rich with deposits under our ground. Let's make sure, and as I know in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, they opened and closed a copper mine in the most marvelous way ever seen on this earth because we have such stringent mining laws in this state. So I think there's people up in northern Wisconsin who are trusting that.
We have to take our break, and we have our quiz coming up, and we have lots more of election news to cover, plus some bills that were signed by Governor Walker this week on voting laws and much more. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review, talking with Lewis Fortas, who is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express. He's a former state lawmaker. Margaret Farrow, also a former state lawmaker, a member of the UW System Board of Regents. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for our Week in Review quiz. The newest Milwaukee brewer, Hank the Dog, is already on the disabled list after his successful debut on opening day this week. Why is this? Why is Hank the Dog on the disabled list? If you would like to guess for an opportunity to possibly win a fantastic prize, 1-800-642-1234. We'll give you 5 minutes, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers and announce the winner and the answer at the end of this week in review. All right, well, let's we'll get back to some other election-related issues, but we have a caller who has an issue from the news this week that he would like to introduce. Art in Ripon. Hello, Art.
Hi. I'm calling today because of a bill that the governor signed this week, Assembly Bill 202, which I'll call the Voter Harassment and Intimidation Bill. And what this did is it allowed election observers to be within 3 feet of the tables where people can register to vote or where they give their name and address. And I think what this is going to be is come this fall, you're going to see groups like True the Vote show up, and they're going to be challenging people in areas like Racine, Kenosha, and the urban areas, Milwaukee.
Yeah, well, Margaret, what's the deal with that? And is the Republican Party trying to make it harder to vote in Wisconsin as charged by some Democrats?
I'm not, I'm not inside that sort of government concerns these days, but I guess historically I could take some you know, history and add it to it, perhaps. I think there is a real concern about polling. I think our on-site registration, though it makes us the most liberal and progressive, you know, in the way it's always in quotes used, it causes problems also. I know, and it's hearsay, so it's second person, but I know of people who confronted busloads of people in Racine over the last several years coming up from Illinois and told people they were from Illinois and voted by registering with addresses that were no one ever goes back and checks them. I think we've got to be more and more careful about our on-site registration. So I don't know if it's just the registration table they're going to be concerned about or if it's the people where we have seen a few cases that have been processed and proven of people giving other people's names or people who are deceased, because we don't purge our election rolls of deceased people. They just want to be able to see it, perhaps. I don't want to see harassing at the polls. I don't believe this law will lead to that. I don't think the governor would have signed it if he thought it was going to.
Mm-hmm. Lewis?
I think that Margaret is kind of continuing this this myth that there's all this kind of voter fraud going on in Wisconsin. They did. They had bipartisan leadership. I think Biskupic, when he was a U.S. attorney and Republican, of course, was involved in investigating all this. And they came back and said that there was no systematic, organized voter fraud in Wisconsin. So are there occasionally people who are maybe a felon who votes? Of course. But that's not organized, systematic voter fraud. That's sometimes just, you know, making a mistake or stupidity or whatever the case may be. But the thing that's interesting is the United States and Europe and some of the advanced countries spend a lot of money working in the developing world trying to foster democracy and trying to encourage more voting and trying to make it easier for people to vote and removing restrictions. And here in Wisconsin and some of the other Republican-controlled states like Michigan and Florida and that are now putting up every kind of barrier they can to voting that in this guise of that there's some kind of voter fraud, which no one has been able to find or prove. It's hard to believe that they're not trying to discourage voting. But, Joy, I want to get back to one other thing that Margaret said, and then I got cut off because of the
go ahead, the break.
Was that Margaret was comparing the Koch brothers to the union, saying that the Republicans had sat back while the unions were organizing people and getting their message out. And the Koch brothers, they start doing getting involved and people get critical of them. Well, the difference is the unions were organizing people and getting their message. The Koch brothers are organizing their bank accounts, trying to figure out, you know, which bank account to draw the money from when we send it to Wisconsin, when we send it to Michigan, we send it to other places. One is dealing with people in a democracy, which is fair game. The other is basically having a few people with a ton of money pulling the strings. And yes, they can do a lot of damage in with negative campaigns. Margaret saying, you know, people are smart enough to understand. If they were getting legitimate and fair information, yeah, I think they're definitely smart enough to understand who to vote for. But when they're getting distorted stuff because there's so much money out there, there's a problem. Yep. So we need to take this seriously.
Voters in 12 rural school districts this week approved extra taxes, in some cases, to keep schools providing normal levels of service. Margaret, what does this say about the state of our schools in the state, the financial state of schools?
Well, I think first of all, we have a constitutional requirement that all children throughout the state have a fair and equal chance to good quality education. We've had a Supreme Court test on that that was done within the last 20 years as things progressed, and it was a long, long, long case. I think it lasted over 4 years, and it was found that we were still in that situation. Our school funding in the state is based on too many formulas, but it's formulas, And it tries to, per value of each child, make sure there's that support either from the local area or from the state infusion of dollars into the area so that they have it. It isn't completely balanced. There isn't the resources, nor with the number of students is it possible to do it. We have a lot of small rural school districts who don't have enough students in the seats to bring in enough money to support what they have to do to meet the requirements of the state. So there's an ongoing study going on in the legislature about that, about the need of rural schools. Now, getting to the referendum, what that does is turn to the individual people in each of those school districts and say, this is your tax dollar. It's going to be raised from you. It's going to be spent right here. And are you willing to do this for either an improvement to facilities, a repair of facilities, or a budget infusion of dollars to meet our everyday operational needs? And I think it, again, brings government back. I personally think the best governments we have are the local governments. It brings it back to the local level, and people make that decision. But money isn't the only solution, and I think we have to keep looking at technology and keep looking at better ways to be in the 21st century, delivering the best possible school and education that we have for each child.
Lewis, if you can be brief, because we have little time and more issues.
Okay. We need to get the schools off the property tax to the degree possible, because you're putting this, you're taking people who are struggling, especially a lot of elderly people, and you're saying, okay, do you want to put money into educating your grandchildren, or do you want to be able to stay in your house? And you don't want a situation like that. So we need to have these formulas that Margaret was talking about to try to equalize things so you can protect some of these poorer communities and enable these kids to have a fair chance. So, and money does matter. I mean, the successful suburban schools, they put a lot of money behind each student. It isn't just, luck that they end up having a very strong graduating class. There's money behind that. Money is important. It's not the only thing, but it's important.
I promised at the very beginning of the show that we would get back to the deadline passing this week for sign-up enrollment in the Affordable Care Act and the Republican budget being released calling for a repeal of the Affordable Care Act. But we have truly less than a minute for both of you. A quick reaction, Margaret Farrow, to the Obamacare story.
I think we're going to continue to see stories, and we're going to continue to see the founders of it struggle to make it work because it's very flawed.
And Lewis?
I think 5 or 10 years from now, people will look back, as they do with Social Security and Medicare, and say, boy, this was really a great piece of legislation. Wasn't perfect, a lot of trouble rolling it out, but it's really helped a lot of people.
Well, we will have more on the Affordable Care Act on point coming up after 9 o'clock. Well, here's our Week in Review quiz answer and winner, Cassidy in Milwaukee. Congratulations. Why is Hank the dog, the newest member of the Milwaukee Brewers, on the disabled list? Well, he was neutered on Tuesday, so the surgery was successful, but he's got to take it easy for a little while. They expect Hank to be running around just fine in about 2 weeks. So, and speaking of sports, we have the UW-Madison Badgers in the Final Four coming up this weekend. I bet you, Margaret Farrow, are going to be rooting for the Badgers.
Well, even though I'm a Marquette grad, I definitely will be, because I think we have the best coach in the country. I think for once the media is paying attention to a real gentleman who's forming gentlemen, and rather than just athletes. And I will certainly be rooting for them. I think Bo Ryan's a real winner.
Are they gonna take it all, Lewis?
We certainly hope so. The game last Saturday night was one of the best games I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was good. Well, I'll be watching. Thanks very much to both of you for being with us.
Thank you.
Margaret Farrow and Lewis Fortas, our guests this week for the Week in Review. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Cynthia Schuster for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.